A Your Vote 2014 conversation with congressional candidate Blaine Richardson. Blaine Richardson announced his candidacy in the race for Maine's 2nd congressional district seat more than a year ago. Richardson is running as an independent. He has been described as a libertarian. He is a Navy veteran and has run several small businesses. He believes in gun rights, opposes the Patriot Act and Food Modernization and Safety Act. He wants to see a dramatic reduction in regulations facing small businesses. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll get to know more about Blaine Richardson. We'll find out why he has decided to take on two major party candidates and throw his hat in the ring for U.S. Congress. This is your chance to ask Richardson questions about the issues that matter most to you. It's a Your Vote 2014 Maine Calling with 2nd District Congressional candidate Blaine Richardson. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A recent poll shows independent candidate Blaine Richardson far behind in the race for the 2nd Congressional District. But Richardson knew, going into this race, that taking on two candidates from the established political parties would be an uphill battle. And he has spent more than a year on the campaign trail, making people, meeting people, sharing his story, and sharing his message. Today, the retired Navy captain and small business owner joins us from our studio in Bangor as part of MPBN's Your Vote 2014 candidate interviews. We'll discuss why he's running and which issues he believes are most important to the people of the 2nd District. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for Blaine Richardson? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Blaine Richardson, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you, Jennifer. A pleasure to be here.
I'm going to start with the same question I'm asking every candidate we have on the show. Why are you running?
I'm running because it's my duty. When I was 22, as crazy as that sounds, when I was 22, went into the Navy flight program, and when I was commissioned as a United States Navy ensign, took a constitutional oath. And it had a lot of meaning then, and it has a lot of meaning now. I still hold my commission as a Navy captain. I'm in the retired ready reserve, and that oath still applies, and it's, you know, protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. It's a wonderful document, and I feel compelled to, you know, get on the field, so to speak, to see if we can get ourselves back on a constitutional track in this country.
Blaine Richardson, you've been described as a libertarian or libertarian leaning. Is that accurate?
Probably not. I'm a little bit everything. I've had people poll me. I'm about maybe 75% that. I really see myself as just a full-blown red-blooded American. You know, I love my country. I especially love the state of Maine, and I want to do whatever I can. I'd like to get us back so that we have some of the things available that we had when I was a child, as far as freedoms go. So,
I'm always interested in how people's political perspective has evolved. Has yours always been what it is today, or has there been a moment or something that's happened that's changed how you view where you are in the political spectrum? Have you been a Democrat or Republican in the past, for example, and had something change your mind?
No, actually, before I ran my first race 2 years ago, my whole life I've been an independent. But the development of my political philosophy really started at an early age. We lived in Denmark. I was there for the 5th, 6th, and 7th grade, 60, 61, 62. And my father took me on a business trip into Berlin, and I saw the Berlin Wall going up. And so I had a great understanding early on of what the Cold War meant to people and freedom. And then I had the honor and privilege during the Persian Gulf War to be present when the wall came down, and also to be one of the military representatives in Bonn for the first unified meeting of the German parliament. So I was again seeing, you know, East Germany join the free world again, if you will.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page questions for 2nd District Congressional candidate Blaine Richardson. Blaine, if you are elected, what are your priorities in Congress? What do you want to do on the first day?
Well, on the first day, I really want to get down there, get my bearings, and see exactly where I'm going to fit in this two-party system. Having said that, some of the priorities here in Maine, number one employer in the state of Maine is Bath Iron Works, and it's no secret that, you know, as a retired Navy captain, I'm completely vetted as far as the Pentagon goes and shipbuilding issues at Bath Iron Works, or the issues up at Loring with DFAS, then the rework of Humvees, or down in Portsmouth with the support and maintenance of nuclear submarines. All very important. I can hit the bricks running. Number two, veterans. I would really like to, take up a position that Mike Mishu had. At the end of the day, no one will take better care of a veteran than another veteran, and I'm a life member of the Disabled Veterans of America.
You've said that on the campaign trail as well, and no one will take as good a care of one veteran as another. Is this thought in relation to what's been going on with the VA administration, specifically the hospitals, like what we're hearing about going on in Arizona and things like that? Do you oppose the idea of having veterans be able to go to services to the private doctors and outside of the system?
No, I don't. We have to have the system in place because we need something that is totally focused on the veteran, but clearly once you get in and you're processed and the rest of that, I see no reason why a veteran, service-connected injuries should not have access to, the best and the brightest of medical service in this country. And we're able to do EBT cards. It's probably not a good parallel, but you could issue the same card to a veteran where he would be able to obtain services anywhere in the United States relative to his service-connected injuries.
Do you believe, though, long-term that this is the right direction, or that the money that would go to the private medical system should indeed be being used to beef up the VA system?
Well, there's one of the things that's interesting about, the VA hospitals, and there's quite a few of them. They're huge, expensive infrastructures, and the maintenance of the facilities and the administration and the bureaucracies that have been created over the years provide no medical services, directly to the veteran. So having some key, we divide the country up into military districts, and Region 1 is New England. Togus would be a fine example of a VA hospital that would be the focal point for all New England veterans to come in and enter the program. And then if they choose to use the hospital, fine. If they want to go to Eastern Maine Medical for a heart procedure or something, you take your card and you go. We need to be way more versatile than we are now, because there's so much bureaucracy. We have veterans slipping through the cracks, and this really disturbs me. When we have an average of 20 veterans a day committing suicide, and we have hundreds of veterans that are homeless and on the road. It breaks my heart as an American citizen, because our promise to them was, you stand up for the country and we will take care of what's left of you. And shame on us. We're not doing as good a job as we can.
Blaine, one of your issues is support for the Second Amendment. Does that mean that you oppose background checks and some of the legislation proposed about sales at gun shows?
I'm a constitutional carry individual. And
can you explain what that means?
Well, what it means is the Second Amendment in the Constitution gives you the right to bear arms. Now, knowing that, we have things in place, laws in place, and they vary from state to state. You know, Maine's Second Amendment, if you will, is actually a little more stringent than the one we have in the Constitution. But we have rules and regulations regarding people's mental capacity to handle a firearm. And clearly, the problems we've been seeing with these mass shootings and the use of weapons in schools and whatnot, the individuals are either medicated or have serious mental issues. And as I testified up in Augusta, we've done some things right here in Maine that I think, you know, really have exacerbated the perceived gun problem. Number one, we closed the Augusta Mental Institute. We closed the Bangor Mental Institute. And we started putting these challenged individuals out into the public. And having dealt with some of these folks directly when I was employed by the town of Rockport, I can clearly tell you that it not only puts the individual at risk, the patient, but it puts the general population at risk. And that's a huge problem.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We're having a Your Vote 2014 conversation with candidate Blaine Richardson, independent, running for Maine's second congressional district seat in Congress. Blaine Richardson, you are opposed to what's been called Obamacare, the ACA. What is the basis of your opposition, and what would you like to see in its place?
What I'd like to see in its place is a federal government and state governments getting out of the way of the practice of medicine, and also some very strong tort reform, not only at a state level, but, you know, at a federal level. We have the best medical services available on the planet, and top-down never worked in the Soviet Union. It doesn't work well in Canada. It doesn't work well in Great Britain. And that's where we're going. This Affordable Care Act, and the other shoe, by the way, hasn't fallen on this act. A lot of people, millions of people, have lost their health insurance because it doesn't apply with the rules of the Affordable Health Care Plan. And that in itself is a serious issue. And then the system to get in is broken. I have watched family members try to access it, and it's just beyond frustration. We need to get state and federal government out of the medical business. And what I mean by that is we need to be able to buy health insurance across state lines. We need to have the legislatures stay out of issuing who these companies have to cover, and we need to stop taxing medical devices. We need to get the corporate income tax down, because that's one of the reasons prescription drugs are high. The pharmaceutical companies, you can buy the same drugs abroad for way less you can buy them here in America because of the corporate income tax. It's just very complex. The federal government has got its tentacles into virtually every aspect of, you know, the medical field and every other thing that we do. And it's just making it very hard to do business in America now.
Do you mean, does this mean that you would like to see the elimination of Medicare?
Medicare works. What we need to do with, you know, Medicare is an insurance program. If the government wants to do an insurance program, you know, that's fine. But it competes with, it used to compete with, you know, programs on the outside. I'm not sure whether it competes or not with the Affordable Health Care Act. And the Medicare program, you know, we pay into that, not unlike Social Security, and that clearly does it deliver service? Yes. Have we been able to shut down the waste, fraud, and abuse that occurs within that program? No. Will we ever be able to? I don't know the answer to that. But no, I don't have a problem with Medicare.
We're having a conversation with candidate Blaine Richardson. If you'd like to join it, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or email us talk@mpbn.net. Of course, you can always post to our Facebook page as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, including Mark from Strong. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make your Vote 2014 programming possible, as do AARP Maine, working on behalf of Mainers 50-plus and their families. Learn more at aarp.org/ME. MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com. And Lambert Coffin, advocating for individuals and businesses in Maine trial courts and administrative agencies, online at lambertcoffin.com. You've probably heard her already. Nora Flaherty is our new host for All Things Considered here on MPBN. She's on the air each evening between 4 and 7. And if you'd like to know more about her, there's more information, including an interview, in your member guide experience, the October edition. In addition, if you're on Twitter, join us for a live Twitter chat with Nora this coming Wednesday morning, October 1st at 11 a.m. Just tweet using the hashtag MPBNChat to participate, or send her a question at rsvp@mpbn.net. There's more information on this Twitter conversation at mpbn.net. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2014 interview with Blaine Richardson, independent candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We will start with the phones and Mark from Strong. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I do have a question for Mr. Richardson. Many candidates, and himself included, in his opening statements mentioned that he wants to get this country back on track, and we hear about candidates wanting to take this country back. And my question is, back from what? Back from whom? Back to what? And he mentioned also that he wants to get back to the freedoms he had as a child. I was born in 1963. A year later, Civil Rights Act was passed, so I perceive myself and many Americans as having more freedoms today than I did and many Americans did as I had a child. So if he could respond to that in specifics, I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Go ahead, Blaine.
Okay, thanks for the question. In 1962, when I was 12 years old, with my parents' blessing, I went to a Western Auto and bought my first Winchester bolt-action 22 rifle all on my little own. You can't do that today. There's a lot of things you can't do today. Our political correctness, it goes on and on. What I would like to get back to and is basically an open, free market that is not heavily, doesn't have the heavy thumb of the federal government coming down on it. There is nothing you can do that does not have the thumb mark of the federal government on it. I've worked in the woods. The EPA regulations, Clean Waters Act, and I'm going to get real specific here. In 1989 Clean Water Act, the EPA controls all navigable waters in the United States. Well, now the EPA, who you don't get to elect or get to vote on, would like to take the navigable part of that definition out. And the problem with that is then everything in Maine for 6 months becomes a wetland. I'd like to remind you, when you have 4 feet of snow on the ground, you basically have 4 inches of water standing in your front yard. They want to regulate all of it. They want to regulate your wood stoves. NOAA, their restrictions on the fishermen, and that has come down on the issue of the right whale. I can go on and on and on. Building houses, the building codes. We constantly talk about affordable housing. Well, HUD comes up with additions to the building codes, and every time you change these codes, they're ramping up requirements, and the prospect of affordable housing gets further and further away.
Mark,
go ahead.
Mark, I was just going to thank you for your question and move on. I'm going to Jill in Augusta. Hi, Jill. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling with Blaine Richardson.
Hi. I just have a couple of thoughts. I'm a person who has lived in Maine all my life. I've spent 44 years working in the medical profession. As an employee, have found that as time has gone on, most recently, our health benefits that are provided to us, we end up getting fewer and fewer benefits from what is provided from the employer, and the deductibles keep going higher and higher. So we get less and less for what we're paying. The other part of that is somebody that, and myself, who has just lost employment recently, has never received any kind of help or benefits from anyone. I find myself without health insurance. If it weren't for Obamacare, I would not have health insurance. At my age, well into middle age, I'm not eligible for Medicare because after you reach the age of 61, you are not eligible. At least that's what I was told. So I find myself in a position where if it weren't for Obamacare, I would have no health insurance. So that's a really important point that people need to know.
Blaine, what would you say to people like Jill who actually find that Obamacare has been beneficial in a real way in their lives?
Well, it is beneficial to a few folks. The problem is it's not beneficial to the large majority of America. And, you know, these folks, it doesn't matter where you work, large employers, Bath Iron Works, hospitals, whatever, it's coming to crunch time here. After this election, changes that the president has enacted with his pen unilaterally end, and people's health care will end, and the quality and services available to you will be greatly reduced, and your deductibles will be much higher, and it doesn't bode well for the majority.
What do you mean by that? That your health care will end?
Well, because with your plans, your insurance plans don't conform with the Affordable Health Care Act. That's what the big, you know, it's the fly in the ointment. And so, and the other issue is the 30-hour work week that employers now are running for relief. And with the change of the 40-hour work week, they're cutting people down to part-time. People are having to work two jobs, and they still may not have health insurance. I mean, health insurance as we knew it 5-10 years ago is going away.
You're saying, Blaine Richardson, that next year, many Americans, most Americans who have health insurance through their companies will see it vanish?
Yes. Well, what they'll see, they'll be offered a plan that they won't be able to afford, or the insurance companies are, people are receiving in the mail now termination letters. They're terminating the policies. And that's not me. That's what's going on right now. You know, go on the internet, do your homework. I mean, this is what's happening. And this Health Care Act is awful. The federal government has set standards that has totally disrupted the insurance industry. And we'll see major insurance companies going totally out of business, or certainly going out of the healthcare business. And it's not good. It's not right. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up.
Jill, thank you for your call. I'm going to move on to Lori in Stonington, because Lori, I believe you also have a comment on the health insurance topic. Go ahead.
I do. And I'm sorry, but I find Mr. Richardson's comments profoundly ignorant. The Obamacare has been an incredible blessing for this state, because there are so many of us who are self-employed. And relative to our average income in Maine, health insurance for people on the individual market was more expensive than probably any other state in the country. For my husband and I, in excess of $2,000 a month before Obamacare to get a reasonable, comprehensive family policy. So it's been just an immense blessing to us, and frankly saved our lives. But, you know, this business about insurance companies being canceled, it's because those insurance companies were rubbish policies. They didn't cover anything. Believe me, I've purchased them before, and you don't find out until you actually need the insurance to pay for something, and you find out, well, it was an inexpensive policy, and you get what you paid for. So it's, for me, an incredible good thing that the exchange can help consumers compare apples to apples. They know what they're getting. They know there will be a limit to out-of-pocket expenses per year. And the policies that are being canceled were crummy policies, basically. High deductible and not very good.
Blaine, would you like to respond to Lori in Stonington?
Yeah. You know, first of all, your private policies are not subsidized. The Affordable Health Care Act is a completely, you know, subsidized program. Also, I was a small business owner. I employed 2, 3, 4 people. I had to self-insure. And you're right. You get exactly what you pay for. And the other thing that I'm going to put out there, there's no one on this planet that is, and I'm going to use this word and I'm going to enunciate it, that is entitled to health care. You are not entitled to anything. You're entitled to what you can afford. And quite frankly, we're not going to be able to afford this. And we already see it. They've taken almost, a $1 billion out of the Medicaid, to jumpstart this, which put, and out of that Medicaid pool of money, money goes to veteran health care. So it put the veterans program at risk. The money is just not there. And we're $17 trillion in right up front debt, and then unfunded mandates, of which the affordable health care arguably is. We go the numbers up in the 50-60 trillion. I don't know where you think the resources are going to come from. And right now in the United States, 30-40% of the folks are on federal food stamps or other federal programs, federal unemployment, and the other half of the wagon is pulling it. And they don't have enough for themselves. We are just at a crossroads here. You have to know how to take care of yourself. And if you're depending on the federal government, look, we can't get one of our Marine veterans out of Mexico. And you look what's going on in the Middle East, we can't get that veteran out of Mexico. If you think the federal government is the answer to your problems, I'd like to, you know, share that I think you're going down the wrong path.
We're having a conversation with Blaine Richardson. He's an independent candidate for Congress in Maine's 2nd Congressional District, going to Beverly in Belfast. Hi, Beverly. Go ahead.
Hi there. Mr. Richardson, a voter asked you a couple of months ago what you would do to address human-induced climate change if you got elected. You replied that Yellowstone's supervolcano poses an even greater threat and that it really scared you. And you dodged the question that I asked you. Given that response, can you tell your listeners what exactly you would do when climate change-related bills are introduced into the U.S. House?
Well, first of all, I don't, you know, now we're going to climate change, you know, global warming, call it what you will. By education, I'm a biologist, okay? In the United States Navy, when I worked with the Military Sealift Command, I supported all the NOAA ships that go out there. I'm in touch with a lot of global scientists. And what I got to share with you is right now the ice sheet up in the Arctic has almost doubled in size. And according to Al Gore, it should have been gone this year or next year. If the thunder doesn't get you, the lightning will. And I'm not going to evade this issue. You're just asking me to try to respond to something that I do not believe is a problem. Man-made global warming, the whole article is man-made. So you may not like that answer, but I spent a lot of time in school studying the clouds and nature and the woods, and I've worked in the woods, and, you know, the argument just doesn't fly.
We are going to take another short break from our conversation with Blaine Richardson, candidate for 2nd Congressional District. He's an independent. When we return, we will have more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make your vote 2014 programming possible, as do Lambert Coffin, partner for growth, offering strategic legal counsel to Maine businesses on the web at lambertcoffin.com. AARP Maine, working on behalf of Mainers 50 plus and their families. Learn more at aarp.org/ME. And MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com.
Climate One is a conversation about America's energy, economy, and environment. To understand any of them, you have to understand them all. I'm Greg Dalton. When it comes to the climate debate, the red-blue divide is really a rainbow of perspectives. And they're colored by who you are, where you live, and what you believe. Red, blue, and green on the next Climate One.
Tune in for that Climate One program following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock.
On the next Fresh Air, how American politics went tabloid. The new book, All the Truth Is Out, is about how the Gary Hart sex scandal in 1987, which ended his presidential candidacy, was a turning point in how the media cover politics, emphasizing character issues over political experience. We'll hear from the book's author, Matt Bai. Join us.
Tune in for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a conversation with Blaine Richardson. He's a Navy veteran and small businessman who is running as an independent in the race to be the next congressperson from Maine's 2nd Congressional District. He joins us from our Bangor studio. If you have a question for Blaine, give us a call. What issues would you like to discuss with him? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Going to Stephen in Alna. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hello, Captain Richardson. I was a submarine veteran, spent 10 years sailing out of Scotland against the Russians. With Putin's recent policies in Ukraine and everything, it appears that they want to try to ramp up a Cold War again. Do you think this country could handle that again, and do you support it?
Well, I certainly don't support another Cold War, having spent a huge amount of my career being involved in it. Can we handle it? Yes, sadly. Our ADSW assets and NAVFAC.
Tell us what ASDW means, Blaine.
Okay, anti-submarine warfare. Arguably, our United States Navy has the most effective sub-detection and elimination program on the planet, thank goodness. And it is still completely intact. From what I understand, this weekend I had a conversation with someone in the know, and Russian sub-activity is up a little bit, but nowhere near what it was in the Cold War. And what concerns me with what's going on in the Ukraine is we have pretty much no more military footprint in Germany. The 5th Corps and the 7th Corps are now gone. The 5th Corps was sent over to Afghanistan and is, you know, no longer home-based in Europe. We could no longer defend with our European allies. So this is a real sticky wicket with what's going on in the Ukraine. And what concerns me further is countries like Poland and Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, they are in this European-Russian tidal zone. And it really becomes complicated if they start putting their eyes on these individuals. So are we capable? Absolutely, yes, we are. However, I don't know about you, but I'm weary of war, and I think that using strong diplomatic action, a lot of people don't, you know, agree with the president's sanctions and whatnot being effective. I think that if you get them really bearing down on the Russian population, the Russians are just like us. They want to be free and go about their daily life and are not interested in the adventures of their President Putin. And these sanctions are starting to put a lot of political pressure on Putin. You just don't hear it over here.
Stephen, thanks so much for your question. Headed to York. And Jim, hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, I've got another foreign policy question for Mr. Richardson. I'm curious about his opinions on U.S. policy towards the ongoing war in Afghanistan and the recent war or continuing war against ISIS in Syria and Iraq.
Real simple. A lot of the argument that you hear that we couldn't get a status of a forces agreement in Iraq is sort of hoi polloi. I had boots on. I've been involved in the Persian Gulf War, Haiti, and this war directly, and I can clearly tell you we could have got that arrangement, and the war could still have been called over. I want to remind you, we still occupy Japan. We still, in a much lesser way, occupy Germany and Europe, and we're still in the Sarajevo. I forget what they call that region again, but we are on the chessboard, and our presence maintains stability. The thing that really frustrates me, I was directly involved with providing aid to the Kurds in the Persian Gulf War. These are incredible individuals, and 90% of Iraq voted in a free election, and yet we couldn't stay around long enough, you know, to help them get their program back in gear so they could protect themselves against the fundamental Islamists. What we're doing today, I don't know if we with the current administration have the resolve to do what we need to do. The other thing is we were a little late in getting about our business over there. This should have been going on over a year ago. I know for a fact that the administration gets daily briefs and the president gets daily briefs, and whether they choose to act on them or not is a whole nother thing.
Jim, thanks for your question. Headed to Clinton and Scott. Hi, Scott. Go ahead. You're on Man Calling.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I just had a quick question about student loans and they're being making a more tangible problem. Is that I see from a student perspective that there is dramatic increase in the amount of debt that a student has when they either graduate or just leave college or university. And there's also, with that, adjunct professors having to sort of complain, for lack of a better term, about low pay. So clearly there's something in the administrative side that may be pulling too much money. But I was just wondering from a political standpoint what your take on it was.
Well, I'm a little bit disturbed with the federal government now controls all student loans. They didn't when I was going through, and you could negotiate your terms, you know, with private banks. One of the very interesting phenomenon occurred once the federal government started getting a total grip on it. Tuitions around the country went up. And so the loans went up. And the reason they went up is because the colleges and universities, you know, feel that these loans are backed by the federal government. And we've heard talk back and forth about the potential of this administration forgiving loans and, you know, canceling debt. But the long and the short, they haven't yet. And the interest rates now are right up there. And again, this is the federal government, you know, extracting its pound of salt out of our student population. I'd like to see the federal government right out of the school loan business and get it back into private competition. If banks had to compete for students' loans, the interest rates, I think, would be more affordable. Also, universities would, you know, because there's risk when you borrow, I think we would see tuition, you know, coming down.
Thank you, Scott. We have an email from Adam. He writes, I just heard Mr. Richardson refer to being in touch with many climate scientists in regard to global warming. I was hoping he could give a name of one such science or science organization that shares his view of a growing polar ice cap.
I don't even have to share that. You can go right on to the internet and you can Google Earth and do the overlays yourself. You don't need to take my word for it. And if these individuals that I worked with gave me permission to publicly release their names, I'd do it. But I don't have that privilege. And climate change is part of the natural process. And right now, you heard one of the previous callers talk about the hot spot in Yellowstone. I would like you to go Google Iceland volcanoes and get the Iceland update. They have an incredibly large volcano right now underneath a glacier, and it's starting to melt the glacier, and it's starting to heave. And if you remember a couple of years ago, we had one go off in Iceland, which is much smaller than this one, and it shut down over 100,000 flights globally. So, and Krakatoa is also, which was responsible for the miniature ice age in the 1700s in Europe, it's growing as we speak. So if the thunder doesn't get you, the lightning will. You know, we have an exciting ride on a wonderful rock going through the universe. And it has a much greater effect on our lives than we do.
Hoping to get to a few more questions before the end of the hour, going to Josh in Swanville. Hi, Josh.
Hi. I just wanted to ask the candidate about his position on some of the large infrastructure projects that are currently being suggested in Maine. Including the East-West Corridor and LNG expansion on the coast. and if the candidate from his independent position would be able to assert Maine sovereignty in negotiating with these large energy corporations.
I'll tell you right up front, the East-West Corridor, if it happened, would be one of the most wonderful things for the Maine economy. Our greatest export in Maine, make no mistake, are our children. In my personal family, my daughter Jana works in Chicago. My son Kyle works in Seattle. And the industries and businesses they're in don't exist anymore in the state of Maine. Maine, in particular Eastport, which is in Washington County, arguably the poorest county in the state of Maine, if not east of the Mississippi, is more than a day and a half closer to the Straits of Gibraltar than any other port on the east coast of the United States. And the industrial infrastructure of North America lies within 500 miles of the Great Lakes system. And there is no closer route than an east-west highway. And it's not an easy argument. I'm just sort of glad that we're not trying to look at developing I-95 or Route 1. And I'd like to remind everybody there was quite a fight years back just trying to widen I-95. So I think of our children and our grandchildren and their futures here in Maine, and there's no reason why we shouldn't share in some of the world prosperity.
Thanks for your question, Josh. Going to Peggy in Bangor. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Well, the first thing, just because of something that was said, if I can Google the names of the scientists who are supposedly saying that we're not having global warming, then why would that be a private affair between Mr. Richardson and those people? The other thing is that the thing about entitlement. I worked all my life. I am getting Social Security now. I am entitled to Social Security because I paid for it. The medical part of all of this, while I was working, I could not afford it going up and up and up. And all of the insurance companies left Maine long before Obamacare. Obamacare has helped a lot of my friends. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have open heart surgery. I don't know where you're coming from, but you don't know Maine, and you scare me. That's it.
Blaine.
Okay, well, I do know Maine, and I would agree with you. Social Security is not an entitlement. Everybody that is paid into it has an expectation that it's going to pay out to them. I can't address your personal medical situations, but Obamacare, I would love you to find anybody that can say they're better off losing their private insurance. I hear people daily complaining. They're scared to death. We should not be afraid of the actions of our government. And that's exactly where we are with this Affordable Care Act, that you have to pass it before you know what's in it. And it's outrageous. It is absolutely outrageous. We knew how to take care of ourselves before. We know how to take care of ourselves now. And if you're in need of heart surgery, no one in America is denied health care. You go to an emergency room, you are going to get health care for your problem till they solve it. And
you know what? I think we have time for one more question, so
okay.
I'd like to fit this one in an email from Jean in Bethel. She says, I'm having trouble understanding why someone who has so little trust in the federal government wants to serve within it.
Because you want to affect change. You can't make waves in a bucket of water unless you stick your hand in it. And the last three conflicts, I was working right up in the nosebleed section. I have briefed senators and people in the House, vice presidents, secretary of defenses, and I sort of know how it works down there. If you want to make a change, you got to get involved. It's very easy to complain. It is very easy to make noise. If you get involved, which we did, and my generation did during the Vietnam War, you get out there and you make a stink and you try to effect a change. Well, if you want to change what's going on in Washington, you need to change who's in Washington.
All right. And, well, Blaine, that's going to be your last word. Thank you so much for joining us today. Blaine Richardson, running as an independent in the race for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. John Keimel ran the board today. Rich Tozier helped us from our Bangor studio. We had additional assistance from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, including all of our Your Vote 2014 interviews, as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, another Your Vote 2014 interview, this time with Elliot Cutler, independent candidate for governor. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.